When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
City of Chronicles is a Bay of Chronicles production.
Ciao tutti and welcome to, I wanted to say the first episode of the Serie A Chronicles podcast, but it's the second one because we obviously had a preview episode. I'm Mina Rizzucchi and I'll be your host for today. And as always, I am joined by the wonderful Nikki Bandini, who I'm trying really hard to smile and giggle at, but I listened to a podcast she did like a few days ago. And I'm slightly angry with you, Nikki.
What did I do? Did I say something nice about Dybala?
Yeah, like that's going to make me really angry with you.
Did I say that Juventus were better with Pjanic? Is that what I did?
You don't honestly think that, do you? No, somebody asked you about Juventus possibly winning, and you just said, oh, well, good luck with that. That was your honest answer. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? Why good luck with that? And then you said, oh, Roma are my dark horses. So now you think Roma has more of a chance of winning the title over Juventus?
I think what I said was, because I was put on the spot and I was not ready for the question. They said, who do you think will finish higher between Roma and Juventus? I think what I said was, on balance, I think that Juventus are more likely to finish ahead, because I think that if you're asking me which team is more likely to finish in the top four, it's definitely Juventus. Like, I think Juventus will 100% be in the top four, whereas I could imagine Roma missing it still. But then if I have to ask who I think is more likely to win the league, I weirdly think I do believe in Roma more than Juventus. I don't see this Juventus team as a league-winning team. I don't think that Roma are anywhere near the favourites to win the league. To be clear, my favourites to win the league are Inter and Milan, 100%, and this first weekend hasn't changed that yet. Juventus haven't played yet, Mina. We're recording on Monday, so I haven't got any evidence to hold on to for Juventus. Uh-huh. I'm just really dubious with Juventus. I'm not convinced they've changed enough. And last season, they were bad. And that midfield was dismal. And maybe it'll be better, but
Did you see that meme about Rabiot with Fred and McTominay would be McCredient?
Oh, Mina.
It took every part of me to not laugh, but I felt really sorry for Rabiot. I was like, honey, you should stay with us.
But like, that's an Italian thing to do. So I was like, make the portmanteaus. And like, this was like my one tweet for like the whole summer. I'm not on Twitter very much anymore, but I'm on there a lot, but I don't tweet very much. And I had a moment just in the middle of summer holidays. I was like, if Dybala joins Juventus and it's Lukaku and Lautaro and Dybala, Inter. Lukaku and Lautaro and Dybala, we could call them Lulala. Which I just loved so much. And now I'm sad it didn't happen.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry to all our listeners that this is the tangent I've gone off on.
There's so much to talk about because it was unfortunately, Napoli and Juventus haven't played, so actually it's less to talk about. But of course, there were some really exciting matches with Milan and Inter and Roma that everyone has been dying to watch. And some really other interesting games, like Fiorentina against Cremonese and little Radu. Gosh. Oh, God. What a horrible thing to continue to happen to him. All right, Nikki, let's kick off. And obviously, I think we should start with the champions, just because they are indeed the champions. And showed us that yet again with their 4-2 victory over Udinese. Now, it had been three consecutive 1-1 scoreline between these two teams. And finally, Milan delivered the blow. It started off really badly, though, with them conceding. But they were back to their aggressive best. They're back to playing like a little orchestra that takes defensive risks. But my God, it's stunning going forward. Brahim Diaz, I want to start there. I mean, man of the match, played a role in all four games, in all four goals. And as somebody who really suffered in the second half of last season, and a lot of us had question marks, you know, whether or not he's really cut out for this. Real Madrid had question marks as well about his development. And then he produces this astonishing performance. And there's a part of me that thinks, well done to Pioli, because you trusted, you know, a lot of those players. You didn't just rely on the new shiny toys that you bought in. It was like, all right, I trust Rebic. I trust Brahim Diaz. I trust Bennacer at this point, you know, with Krunic, who I thought was really, really good, even though he got some flack on Twitter. I don't know why. And Milan sealed the deal. I mean, I don't know. After this match, I was like, maybe Milan should be the favorites.
I mean, we'll get to Inter. I certainly thought Milan were more convincing than Inter on the opening weekend. As you already mentioned, Udinese has not been an easy opponent for Milan the last few years. Last season, they didn't beat them once. So you could already say they're ahead of where they were last season in terms of identical opponents. Do you think it's a slightly silly way to look at it? But I know people have been doing that. I think you definitely sort of picked out someone really important in Brahim Diaz. He was such a sort of He was his irrepressible best in that second half, wasn't he? And the assist for the last goal in particular, that little sort of like steal the ball, the quick footwork to get the ball out from under his own feet and put it in a position where he could use it, then not making the defender with that ball across the 6-yard box. That's what we like. That's the Brahim Diaz that I think Pioli would like more of. And I think also like Ante Rebic. Now, there's kind of two sides to this with Rebic, because Rebic was 100% at fault on Bacau's opening goal in the second minute, which is, of course, the first goal of the whole Serie A season. Rebic should be tracking him at the near post and doesn't. But Ante Rebic in this game alone scored as many goals as he did in all of last season. And on the preview podcast, Mina, like you were, I think you mentioned him, because I was saying my worry for Milan is, okay, but if Giroud doesn't score as many goals as he did last season, he is getting older, like who's picking up the slack? And Rebic at centre forward, Rebic at number 9 is part of the idea, isn't it? Like it is part of it. Of course, we did also see Divock Origi come off the bench in this game, and he's part of that solution as well. But I think from Milan's point of view, there, the whole occasion is really encouraging, because yes, defending wasn't great. There's some rust there. I think you expect a bit of rust. You're just back from the summer and everyone's going to be a little bit sort of not quite as they should be. Also, Rodrigo Bacau, who has scored 2 other goals in his entire career, always scores against Milan. He scored 3 times against Milan, 2 times against everybody else. But I think that more important than the goals they conceded is just how they responded to them, and the fact that, yes, Frank Kessié has left this team. Sandro Tonali was not available to start this game. And you didn't, exactly as Mina said, throw Ketelaere straight in there. You didn't throw Origi straight in there. You said, okay, I trust this squad that we had last season. It's a young squad. I trust the group. Let's show growth continuously and then integrate these new elements as we go. And I think that was really, really positive for Milan. And yes, look, it's a home game against a team that you're going to finish above. So in some ways, you expect to win it. But Udinese said, again, took 4 points off them last season. So really nice result.
It was interesting because obviously I love listening to everything Marco Giampaolo says, just so I can laugh about it afterwards. And,
just to fuel the fire, Mina loves to listen to him.
Just to fuel the fire. The good old Sampdoria's coach. And he was, I actually felt a little bit sorry for him because he said he had prepared the game so well and he thought he had. And it was unfortunate that they couldn't win their first match. And then I compared that to Milan. And I just think they always, every time Pioli has a significant portion of time to just really dedicate to this team, they come out guns blazing with confidence and brilliance and aggression and desire. And they do go on these massive runs. And I think it's like, if I was to actually predict, I feel like Juventus would have a slow start. Milan will just torpedo everything from the start and then sort of maybe start erring at the start of the latter half of the season. Somewhere along the line, Inter will pick up 1,000 points from November to January and then fall off and have some problems. And I just remember just how much when Milan can really concentrate on just, you know, coaching and bringing this team together, how good they can be and how effective they are and how much they move as an orchestra, especially when you compare that sometimes to the other teams in Serie A that do somewhat rely on individual strengths and talents. You can see the individual brilliance there. You can see what Brahim Diaz does, what Leao does, what Bennacer is so intelligent in doing with cleaning up the balls and recycling possession and delivering perfect passes. But it really is about how they all come together and play as a unit that I think is so impressive about Milan. Defensive inattention, I think, is something that's going to happen at the start of the season. I think what we see for the first 3 weeks is more about how good your attack is, because you just know there are just going to be some mad goals being conceded. But
right. Also, because we know we like Kalulu, we know we like Tomori, we know we like Mike Maignan, right? So you already know you like a lot of that defense. It's not like you think that's not going to work together all of a sudden.
Yeah. And so you feel that, but you look at this team and then you think that they can win the Scudetto, but how far do you think that they have grown in terms of actually challenging for the Champions League is really a question that, I mean, do you see the side? I mean, I know it's the first game, but do you think they're growing enough to head in that direction, or are they just fortifying themselves for Serie A?
I'm excited to find out, is the honest answer. Like, I don't know. Like, in terms of squad, the squad hasn't been sort of massively upgraded, right? And this was sort of an interesting thing, actually, from my Guardian Serie A preview that I wrote. Like, I got someone in the comments who was a bit unhappy that I hadn't put more words on Milan, saying, you know, they're the champions, why not words on Milan? And I said, well, I actually agree with you to some extent. Maybe I should have given more words on them. On the other hand, part of what you're doing in a preview is trying to update readers on everything that's changed. And the truth is, just compared to some other teams, not that much has changed at Milan. They've said goodbye to Kessier. They've brought in a few players, and there's definitely some capacity for evolution. But really, the only really sort of big sort of headline name is De Ketelaere, and even De Ketelaere is not an established superstar yet, is he? He's someone with a lot of potential, and I thought the little window we saw of him in this game was really exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. But it has been a quiet summer, and I think what you're putting your faith in is, well, Milan won Serie A with something like, I don't know, the fourth or maybe even the third youngest team in all of Serie A last season. Why shouldn't they continue to get better? And I believe they will, because I like Pioli, same as you.
Yeah, I think also that this is something we talked a lot about at those last few weeks of the last Serie A season, was the fact that they were being bought out by other investors. And we thought that, you know, that meant with Redbird coming in and an interest from Investcorp, that there was going to be a lot of money invested into the squad to perhaps raise it to the level that could actually compete in Europe. And I look at this team and I think their tactics are good enough to get them so far, just because even, you know, them arriving for the second half of the game and being prepared from the get-go before Udinese had even arrived on the pitch, they were like, okay, we're here, we're going to win this match, we're so determined. And then it's interesting because they always deal with the situation very quickly. You know, they're behind or they're drawing, they just want to get the goals, they want to get it done and dusted, and they want it to be over. The same, I'm not sure, can be said of Inter. Now, this was a very interesting match because obviously they were up against a newly promoted side, Lecce, and they were playing away from home. Lecce is obviously the team that Romelu Lukaku had scored his initial goal in his debut for Inter, and he was back to scoring against them in the 82nd minute. First touch, I think, was it?
Second, not minute.
Yeah, 82nd. Sorry, you're right. Since it was the second minute, not the 82nd minute. So you're right about that. And flying start wonderful. And, you know, and I felt a little bit sorry for the two buses that couldn't take all those Inter fans to watch their team in Lecce. But it was what it was. And then all of a sudden, you just kind of felt like Inter were like, okay, job done. Let's just take a step back. And but disappointing then.
Did you see the video? I mean, this is a tangent from the serious conversation, but did you see the video that Inter shared on their like main Twitter feed, which I thought was a bit mean, but also made me laugh a bit of there was like a what looked like a boyfriend and girlfriend or husband and wife. Like it wasn't, you know, you can't know because you can't go and ask them, but they were sort of sat together, this couple, and they just sort of had their reactions. So when Lecce scored and he's getting all excited and she's like, sort of like, she looks like annoyed, but she's being playful with it because she's the Inter fan, he's the Lecce fan. And then when Inter's goal goes in at the end, he is just thunder and she's trying to sort of joke about it and he's like, does not look like he's ready to joke about it, which I understand because you know what, Lecce within seconds of getting a point off Inter probably was quite a hard to take having that late goal go in, but it was a very funny video and slightly mean to share on the main club social account.
Do you think that's done some irreparable harm to their relationship?
Could you imagine, like, you've gone through that and then you're like, you see it on Twitter and you're like, oh God, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that. what did you make of Lukaku's performance?
It was a mixed bag, wasn't it? Lukaku, scoring after 82 seconds is pretty good and kind of set the whole game up in a way. And I think what was really disappointing was from there, not his performance, but it felt like Inter maybe slipped into some complacency. I thought Lecce played really well, by the way. I mean, we should talk about some of the players like Kilman, who played brilliantly in midfield, really sort of took the game to Inter. But Lukaku did miss a couple of chances as well, which is why I say it was a mixed performance. Inter, at 1-0, Inter missed a couple of chances to win the game, and Lukaku definitely had a couple of those chances. Lecce could also have won the game. It was one brilliant save from Handanovic, which is not a thing I feel like I said that much last season, off a free kick that was deflected on the way through. I think it was a mixed bag from Lukaku. I think the team overall didn't feel like it was quite joined up yet. But in the same way that I think I said with Milan, you've got to give some leniency for the first day of the season, I can still say that about Inter. I was surprised by a lot of Inzaghi's team selection, actually, because I guess he went with Gosens on the left wing back and therefore Darmian at right wing back, which I felt to me like trying to achieve some balance, because I think if you put Dumfries as a starter on the other side, you've got two very attacking wing backs. But then leaving Bastoni out of the starting 11 as well. Yeah, there were some choices that caught me off guard. They obviously, came together in the end, and Dumfries came off the bench and scored that goal. And Mina, I'm really curious to get your reaction, because I think you're not the biggest Lukaku fan. You can tell me I'm wrong. But did you see how, because after Dumfries' winner, everyone runs off to celebrate with Dumfries except Lukaku. And at first I was like, why is he going the other way? And to be fair to Lukaku, he's actually the only one who heads towards the Inter fans. He heads towards the corner where all the Inter fans are. But it was a very ostentatious, like, pumping of fists, goes down to his knees, he's thumping the floor. And I know it went down well with a lot of the Inter fans. There was a little part of me that thought, it's a little bit cynical. It's a little bit like showing too much how much you care to remind them that you're the guy that they that still loves them after being away.
I'm just somebody who's a fan of authenticity, and I don't like a lot of, like, desire to show that you love what you love and you the place of your heart, and he sort of forgets a lot of what he says, right? Because when he left at the time to Chelsea, he said okay about all the dreams and stuff, but he also blamed Inter for not giving him what they wanted, and then, you know, then comes back and talks about now he's back to his, like, heart, forgets about Chelsea. If he'll have another chance, I think he'll probably also forgive me some Chelsea fans one day as well. I never feel he's very authentic in the way he behaves, but everyone speaks very highly of him, all the players do, and like, this is not a dig about who he is as a person. But to me, a lot of it just seems a lot of acting when it comes to the fans and the drama of football. And he sort of plays up to that. And also this anger that he has to prove that he's a world-class striker. And I Maybe he will be a world-class striker. I certainly think he's a very good one, and you showed that in Inter, but is he world-class? To me, he has never been that. So maybe he still has an opportunity to do that, but he's certainly a very good striker, and I think he showed that straight away. And I do think that he's a huge advantage for Inter, but there's just so much about his character that it just rubs me the wrong way, and I don't know. I just don't know why. You know, like it's a little bit like a Dybala thing. You know, it just rubs me the wrong way. But even with Dybala, at least I feel like when he cries, it's genuine tears. And I just feel with Lukaku, I'm not really sure how much of it is genuine or not. But
I think it's complicated because, like, I remember really sort of like feeling like when they won the league, and he had that reaction of going out and sort of standing out the sunroof of his car and someone was driving around. I thought that was one of the most genuine sort of connections I've seen a top level footballer have with their audience. Because a lot of the time when we see footballers go and win, you know, the Premier League, Serie A, La Liga, Bundesliga, they're so separate from fans, right? It's a celebration on the pitch that we can all join sort of by watching it. But you're definitely very aware that you're spectating something. Whereas that felt like a real sort of like, no, I'm going out into this, which he's not the only player ever to have done that, but it's not that common. And I thought that was really authentic. This, I don't know, like maybe I'm being too cynical now because there was something about the sort of...
Maybe I've rubbed off on you.
There was just something about the fact that everyone else, like all his teammates, are off celebrating somewhere else and he's doing this thing right in front of his hands. Like, well, don't your teammates matter as well? But do you know what? Like, I also can understand from his point of view, I'm sure he does feel, I think there's sincerity in that he probably feels like maybe I blew a good thing here, right? Like the fans loved me and they did love him. And I went away and I needed to like make that bit of extra effort to remind them that we can be great together. And like, I would get that as well. I probably would be overcompensating in his position as well, frankly. So I shut up about it. But anyway, he
can I just make a point? Just one thing. When I think of players who really love their team, I think of Giorgio Chiellini and Juventus. I think of Javier Zanetti and Inter. And I think of Sandro Tonali and Milan. And somebody who just doesn't care about how he's viewed. He just wants to stay there. He just wants to play there. I feel like Barella is just so desperate to play for him. So he just doesn't care about anything else. You know, he wants to be there. He's so happy to be there. And and I feel like it's about the club. It is about who they represent to them as people. You know, what Juventus means to Chiellini, what Barella feels about Inter, that special bond that he has for the team that he supported as a child. For example, Tonali, who's like, I don't care what happens. I'm staying here for love or no money. I don't care. But for me, what Lukaku loves about Inter is that he did well there and he was praised for it. So the bond there is more about his brilliance and how well he did than it is about Inter as a club and what, obviously they loved him because he was good there. Had he been bad there, would he have shared that bond? I don't think so. So it's not about Inter. It's about what he did as a player there and how much he received in glory from that. Had he received that glory from Salernitana, then I think it would have been the same. Whereas that's what I feel is different in authenticity when you love a club, because it's about the club and not about what they gave you. But obviously, both are still valid. You can still love a club because of what you achieved there, you know? But for me, it's just different to how I feel like when I think of Barella and Inter, Tonali and Milan, or so on and so forth. Bonucci and Juventus, it's not authentic. I don't feel that, you know? But I do with Chiellini. It's just that kind of thing.
I understand that. And I think the greatest way you can show fans that you care about them is truthfully, like the way that fans will feel it is just don't leave, which is what Chiellini did, which is only to have in the end. But it's what Zanetti did. If you stay somewhere long enough, fans will appreciate you for it.
Or Dries Mertens not choosing Juventus. Yeah.
In terms of the actual on-pitch stuff, look, his performance wasn't perfect. The connection with Lautaro definitely wasn't like as seamless. Oh, we're back and it'll all work. I thought Inter's tactics in the second half were a little bit desperate. It was like, let's throw on Dzeko and Correa and Mkhitaryan and have them with Lautaro and Lukaku. It was just like, let's throw everything at the wall and see if something sticks. When in fact, the thing that sticks was sort of sticking even before Dumfries scores the goal was actually Dumfries on the wing that I thought made the biggest sort of difference, or their plays seemed to go down him. But having said all that, do I still think that Lukaku being there makes Inter better? Yes, I do. I think he'll score a lot of goals. And I think if he scores a goal a game, which is where he is after one game, not really suggesting that's a measure, but you know, he did score close to a goal a game in his last season in Italy, then they'll be very, very happy and it will make a big difference to Inter's title chances.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think that he makes a huge difference. But I do think one absence that I particularly noted was the absence of Perisic. I mean, Gosens is a good player, don't get me wrong, but he is, and very few people are of the intellect of Perisic, you know, and his ability to just knit everything together and produce so much out on the wing on the left-hand side is something that I think was really missing there. I understand the tactics about moving the ball really quickly with DiMarco being used there, and it's about, you know, it sort of topples over and they try to stretch the pitch as much as possible so you can have runners going in and Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez have more space, but it sort of didn't work. And I don't expect it to, because I think it takes time for that kind of, I do think Inzaghi's tactics can be sophisticated, so they do take time, I guess, to really be interpreted well by everyone that he has there. And it's a big squad and he needs to make sure that all of them feel wanted and desired. And like you said, it's Dumfries and Damian. Damian had a great first half. I mean, he's the one who delivered the assist, but then Dumfries made the difference, you know. Then you've got Bastoni. How can you ever leave out Bastoni, right? But then you sort of look at DiMarco and what he can provide. And it's very complicated to make it all work. So I know it's going to take a little bit of time. Defensively, this is still a side, though, that makes me shake a little bit. De Vrij is just really not the player that he once was, you know. And I think it's so important that you hold on to Skriniar, because otherwise I am super worried about that defense, you know. The midfield didn't really take off for me either. You mentioned, the one for Lecce. I always struggle to...
Hjulmand. Yeah.
Like it was, I really felt like it was him against like 50 people. And he was just, you know, batting them off and doing everything he can. Whereas when you look at Inter and the level of quality they have with the likes of Brozovic, you and Çalhanoğlu, and you expect a little bit more perhaps, but they hadn't really taken off. I expect them to get better. They're always a team that get better slowly. But I just thought Lecce, no, I don't agree when people said they played dirty. I think they did everything they did. I thought Asan Cisse was exceptionally good in getting the goal. Mm-hmm. And I'm really actually excited to see them, because I think I thought of them as being, so easily going to be demoted yet again. But actually, if they play like this, considering how many rookies they have on that pitch, how many people never played in Serie A, and that their transfer market's not over, maybe they're a team to watch going forward.
Yeah, 7 players in that team playing their first ever Serie A game. Hjulmand, we've talked about. Cisse, you just talked about. I thought Strefezza on the right was this sort of chaotic. I don't think he's sort of special or anything, but he was this chaotic but dangerous presence on the right as well. They were more competitive than I thought they would be. And I think actually, funnily enough, Monza are going to be the team that everyone talks about. They've had the most of highest of like visibility summer, and not just because it's Berlusconi and Galliani, because it's some of the players they've signed. But, you know, we'll get to Cremonese as well. I think actually all of the newly promoted teams acquitted themselves well, and actually probably all of them better than the Monza did. So, Monza being, as in Cremonese and Lecce, did even better than Monza did. So all of these teams might be more competitive than we thought, which is nice. I hope it will be that way.
Yeah, maybe it'll be Monza that's the first to be relegated, and they're the ones that we believed in the most. Let's talk about Roma. I would have loved to have seen how Inter would have played with Dybala last night. I mean, sorry, on Saturday night, rather.
Lulala.
But lulala, so but he decided to join the Fab Four. And this was a strange game. Also, you know what it was? What I found really interesting is the reaction to this match from Twitter, from social media, from the newspapers, you know, like Corriere called him the master of the scene. Gazzetta had so many words for Dybala about, you know, the beauty of his touch and his passing. But it's really, I don't know, when I looked at that match, other than the fact that none of them could seem to really score a goal, yeah, I mean, they're all very good at producing the beauty, but not really at finishing. But Zaniolo was the player who stood out for me. He was the one who was giving the ball, charges forward, dribbles forward, looks for the spaces, you know, looks for his partners, always going forward, always with the intent to attack and create space and take on defenders and cause trouble. But it's always Dybala that we speak about, even if he had a good game. But I mean, for me, it was Zaniolo deserved the whole headline, even if he can't finish.
Yeah, I mean, this game should have been 3-0 or 4-0. Like I mean, well, maybe 3-0 or 4-1, because in the end, they did allow some chances as well. But Roma were all over Salernitana. It's one of the many games because it's the opening weekend. We go like, well, I'm not sure how to judge it. I mean, Salernitana were bad for a lot of last season and they sort of did their escape and everything. But I thought Roma were impressive. Roma took on the game that was in front of them. Zaniolo was absolutely the star of the show. Like you said, his running, his directness, his getting in behind the defense repeatedly, really, really sort of exciting and fun to watch. That was one of my questions with this Roma team, actually. You know, you've got all of these exciting stars that we're all curious about. Does Zaniolo and Dybala, like, and Tammy Abraham, does that work? How does it work? Pellegrini in the mix. And the sort of fear in your mind is, well, it's still Mourinho. Is Mourinho going to somehow take all of this and then just camp it on front of his penalty area and be boring? And they weren't. They were fun. They played interesting football. They played direct attacking football. Maybe that's just because they were playing Salernitana, but it was entertaining to watch. I thought they were good. I mean, I also sort of, I don't want to sort of skip over the match too quickly, but I do want to talk about Mourinho as well, because he's already, I mean, him and Sarri actually both are already on form and sort of gearing us up for their derby in not too long. But Mourinho sort of responding to people like me saying a dark horse for the title. I mean, he wasn't saying it to me, but it was brought up in a press conference for this game. Oh, could you be a contender for the Scudetto? Like people are saying only if there are 18 Scudetti to be handed out. Because the only two teams who have spent less than us this summer is Samp, I think it was Samp and Lecce, which is such a Mourinho line. Because, like, yes, okay, sure, Jose, like, you didn't spend transfer fees, but Dybala's getting more in this year's salary than the entire transfer budget you spent this summer. So a little bit of misleading stuff from Mourinho. But look, I've said what I've said, Mina. They're my dark horse. They didn't discourage me this weekend to believe that they could be there first, a dark horse. I agree with you. Zaniolo was really, really fun to watch this weekend. And that's exciting because last season he was very much kept in the sort of work in progress box, and with Mourinho as well being one of the ones most insistent that we shouldn't get too carried away with him.
Intellectual prostitution. Wasn't that his words?
Well, he said that before. Did he say it this time?
Well, isn't that his phrase?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But I am accusing him of intellectual prostitution. How dare you talk about your transfer fees that you didn't spend any money? Honey, Real Madrid won the Champions League and Crystal Palace has spent more money on them in the last 7 years. In fact, I can name about 10 or 15 different clubs in the Premier League that I've outspent Real Madrid. Honey, you've been in the top four of the highest wage bills in Serie A for so long. Last year you were fifth, but only outdone by Milan, who's paid 8 million more, and they won the freaking title. Lazio, who actually paid far less in wages, did pretty much the same with you when it came to Serie A. But you know what? You won the Conference League because you spent 90 million on the transfer market last season. And you know what? It's accumulated. We don't just consider one season. Let's not forget how much you spent already in the winter transfer market, dear Jose Mourinho. So don't talk to me about Lecce spending less than you. This is intellectual prostitution. It is unbelievable that he had the gall to actually say that. And you know what I think is interesting is how nobody responds to it. Like, everyone's just like, all right, okay, but you know, yeah, he's right. Like, nobody spent anything. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. And I'm just thinking, I mean, you just talk Ronaldo. You're paying half his salary, which is already nearly 5 million. Then you've got Dybala for 6 million. You know, you think all this, what, it's all free? How much is your own salary? You're one of the highest paid. Do you think salary's being paid as much? Oh, dear Jose Mourinho. Sweetie, if you don't finish in the top four, you are absolutely a failure with this squad. And I'm sorry, but it must be said, like, with what they have now, with the players that they have now, with who he is and his reputation as a great tactician, then, or at least a great manager, then they have to finish top four. Or at least really challenge for it. Because I am sorry, but I look around and their squad is better to me than Napoli's one right now. So they should be looking to do that. And yes, Zaniolo is the hero. And my God, please do not sell him to Spurs. I am telling you, you cannot bring in a guy who's 28, about to turn 29, put all your eggs into that basket when you have a kid who belongs to you and can play the kind of direct and brilliance on the ball that Zaniolo has, that's the guy to invest in, not all the others. That's the guy to invest in. And I really hope they do.
Well, the hero was actually Cristante, because he's the one who actually bloody put the ball in the net. But
good choice to play him, though, over Matic. I thought his choices actually in subs were far better. Like both he and Inzaghi got a lot of credit for their choices. Inzaghi, to me, I agree with you, seemed a lot more panicked in his choices. It was like, let's just throw on everyone we can. But actually, I quite liked what Mourinho did, except for the part where he said, well, I need Belotti, so I should, you know. It's, of course, because you always need more signings. And I don't know what Belotti changes, but...
Personally, I'm just very, very happy that it's week one of the season. And I've already managed with that Mourinho quote to get the first good Mina rant out. I drew it. You know, like sometimes footballers draw a foul. I was like, if I just drop this in front of Mina, maybe she'll pick it up.
Is that what you did? You were hoping it would be Dybala. But it ended up being Mourinho. You never know. You never, never know. In other games, were you surprised by Cremonese as well? What was that?
It was such a weird game, wasn't it? Because Fiorentina, a 2-1 up and a man up at halftime. You think, okay, this is done. Right? Like, I don't need to. We're all multi-screening. It's the start of the season. You're trying to like flick between games. You think, I don't need to give this one my full attention in the second half. Maybe I'll be like watching Lazio a bit more. And then they sort of just got progressively worse. On the Fiorentina side of it, some encouragement for sure in the fact that Luka Jovic scored. I thought it was a very Luka Jovic, like good Luka Jovic goal, like the sort of goal that he used to score, and that sort of effectiveness inside the box and a smartly taken turn. And it just felt like such good vibes in that moment for Fiorentina. Like, great, our new signing's doing his thing. We're going to beat this newly promoted team. But Cremonese were great. I was really interested even before the season. I don't know if I would have said, well, I didn't say that I thought, oh, they're, you know, got great chance to stay up or anything like that. But the combination up front of Dessers, who was the top scorer in the Conference League last season, Ciro Dessers, and Okereke has been like intriguing, right? Like I wanted to see what that would do. And Okereke ends up scoring at the weekend. I thought the pair of them both at times looked dangerous. The whole team created chances, kept going forward. Even on 10 men, they kept sort of carving out those opportunities. And it was a really impressive performance from Cremonese on 10 men, and just the worst possible way it could end for them, and specifically the worst possible way it could end for poor Jonathan Radu, who actually had quite a good game for 94 minutes, I thought. And then...
Oh, I know.
In the sort of direct continuation of the last time we all saw him against Bologna, where he surrendered control of the title race for Inter. That's literally what happened. His blunder cost Inter control of the title race. Another blunder to cost his team the points, because he just dropped the ball under his own crossbar, which, I mean, heartbreaking. It should be said that if it wasn't for talking about that, you could have had a big conversation about Gallini at the other end and his blunder on the second goal for Cremonese. But
exactly,
it's the last one that gets talked about the most, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In other news, Atalanta got back to scoring ways and they managed to defeat Sampdoria. Not hard to do when Jeff Powell is on the bench. And of course, there is Monza, that I did expect a little bit more of, but I'm particularly impressed by Torino. I think it's worth mentioning that Miranchuk, who they did buy from Atalanta, and Radonjic behind Sanabria was such a fascinating attacking trident. And I'm interested to see how that all works together going forward, because, you know, Belotti is probably heading to Roma. Also, Samuele Ricci. I really want this guy to do well. I think he could be an important player for the Italian national team, and I need him to progress pretty quickly, because he looked very good for Empoli, and then obviously sold to Torino, and then Aslani went to Inter, who was his backup. So I need Ricci to do well as well. So it was important for me to watch that match, and I thought Torino was pretty impressive, especially because they tend to struggle away from home, so it was good for that. Do you have anyone else stand out to you? Any other game you want to mention?
I think you're showing your typical anti-Lazio bias, Mina, by not talking about Ciro Immobile scoring again to start the new season.
It is totally my anti-Lazio bias.
No, I mean, actually, like when it comes to Lazio, almost the thing that I enjoyed the most is not even football, but I did enjoy, because we were talking about Mourinho and what he said before, that Sarri has already started the sort of the local jabbing, because he said with a team like Roma's, I'd be disappointed to finish second. So Sarri is already sort of upping the ante on Mourinho. I think I said earlier in the show, it was a few weeks, actually, it's a little bit longer, I thought, till the Rome Derby. It's November. I got that wrong. But still, I like the idea of that just sort of bubbling up and giving us a little bit of time to get those two, engaging in what we used to call mind games. I don't know what we call it now, but winding each other up a bit, hopefully.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Arnautovic, who when asked about United said not bothered if he doesn't move, scored the penalty for Bologna. So I was kind of thrilled for him because I hope he scores like 20 goals this season as they enjoy the beauty of Rabiot's play. let it just go through.
There's one thing we have to say about the Lazio game, which I can't believe I forgot. But talking about sort of spectacular introductions to Serie A, Luis Maximiano, the goalkeeper, after 6 minutes into his Lazio career, getting sent off for handling outside the box. What a way to introduce yourself to the new team and to get your time started there.
It's quite a lot of blunders from the goalkeepers, yeah. Really, you know. And then it is really bad. In my head, I was thinking, God, what can we look for tonight, you know, between Verona, Napoli and Juventus and Sassuolo. And I'm thinking, well, Szczesny's not there, but Perrin. Oh, anyway, this should be exciting. Let's see who plays in goal for Napoli. I'm really actually excited to watch these two teams. So let's see what happens. I wish we could have watched them and talked about it today. Unfortunately, guys, we do have to go behind a paywall. We've explained that, you know, we do have more than just me and Nikki that do this show. We have a wonderful producer as well who puts this all together. And sadly, we have to go behind a paywall to make this feasible and sustainable. This will be the last episode that we will air for free. We just wanted to share with you one last time just how much fun we both are when we are on together and just being able to dissect all the games and making fun of different coaches and different teams and enjoying the beauty of the play of Serie A. And people are excited about Tuchel and Conte. This is every day in Serie A, you know. Also, we want to just do a shout out to some of our Chronicles Tifosi who've signed up. So thank you so much. I'll read out a few names. And then, Nikki, you're going to have to help me out as well.
No problem.
The first is a welcome to Giuseppe Ciano, Frank Risotto, who's the host of the Gentleman Ultra podcast. So please do go and check that out. Okay, this one's going to be hard for me. Message, Kariatowski. I hope I said that right. If I didn't, then you know what? Come back at me because I deserve it. Bezhan Sarsenbaev. I think I'm going to hand over to you, Nikki.
you took on some of the trickier pronunciations there, Mina. So I think that's fair. Thank you also to James Sifakis, to Desmond. We love a one name, just Desmond. And also just Rob. Thank you, Rob, as well for your messages on Instagram. Rory Robinson and Rosalind Armitage. Just to sort of add on to what Mina was saying before about the Patreon paywall, because someone did sort of raise it in my Guardian comment section this week. I really can't stress enough, like from our point of view, this wasn't the choice we wanted to make. This is a choice we really fought pretty hard last season to try not to make. And still, if someone were to magically show up at some point and say, here's a sponsorship package that could keep you free to air this season, of course we would do that. We would prefer to do that. The reality is that making a podcast is not a cost zero exercise. Like, again, as Mina's mentioned, we have a producer, we have hosting fees, there's things that go into it. And we are also professionals who need to think about our time as well. So I am gutted, honestly gutted to at the thought that we're going to be closing off people who we understand not everyone can afford to do things. I get that. I have subscriptions every month. I have to weigh up what I can afford and what I can't. If something comes along that lets us change this, we would. It's just the reality where we are at the moment. We had 40,000 downloads a month last season, which is pretty strong, but we didn't manage to get a sponsor to support us financially. So that's why we're having to ask if people can do it directly. But yes, if you are sat listening to this and thinking, well, my big company could pay for it, then get your big company to drop us a line and talk, because that conversation can happen. So with all that being said, if you are so inclined to come join our Patreon Chronicles Defosi membership, you can do that at celiaccronicles.com/Patreon. There's an option there to get all the full episodes. And it won't just be these episodes that Mina and I record together. We'll be doing our little sound voice notes that we did last season as well. So lots of content, hopefully, for you guys there. You can also leave us a one-time tip via Ko-fi. Link again on the website, seriachronicles.com. You can find us on Twitter at Mina Rizuki and at Nikki Bandini. And you can follow Seria Chronicles on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And come join us on the Patreon next week. All right, guys, until then, see you later. Bye.
Ciao.
Maggio. E poi c'è Schillaci! Gol di Schillaci! Traversa ancora di Totò Schillaci! E vedete l'entusiasmo degli azzurri, tiro di grande potenza e precisione di Totò Schillaci.
È stato bravissimo Schillaci a seguire l'azione ed ad infilarsi in mezzo ai due difensori centrali e a tirare senza fermare la palla, prendendo il contropiede completamente il portiere.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.